This episode of AVXL is recorded on December 1st, 2017. We're going to talk about micro LED TVs. CES, it's coming, people. Vinyl is grossly overrated and a Roku TV surprise. All that and more coming up on this episode of AVXL.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content. Home entertainment is our friend, people. We love speakers. We love headphones. We love stereo music. We love movies and television and documentaries. We also kind of like the outdoors. I was in the outdoors today.
Awesome.
There were trees. There were dogs. Color was highly accurate.
Excellent.
Sky was a little off.
HD quality.
I'm going to
4K.
I will say 4K UHD. maybe even like 10K UHD.
10K, baby.
Oh my goodness.
Camera one and camera two.
I've been inside a lot this week, so being outside, surrounded by dirt and children, was most excellent. And I hope your morning or evening or whatever time of the day you're watching, listening to AVXL is most excellent. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Heron.
Robert Heron is back from travels, and
indeed.
You got to fly on, like, the tiniest airplane ever. Well, no.
An eight-seater. Still, that was unexpected.
That's unusual for a regularly scheduled commercial flight.
Couldn't get a direct flight to where I needed to go, and when I booked it, I just didn't even pay attention to the layover parts of it, and then it's effectively after the main flight on a quote-unquote regular plane, ended up on a nice eight-seater with two for the pilot and the co-pilot. And
single engine.
Yes, and let me see. Actually, somebody pointed out exactly what aircraft that was, and I was rather impressed and appreciative of the description, because it had me look it up. And up here it is. It was. Tick, tick, tick. A TBM 800 or an 850.
Huh.
Thank you, Mr. Kreslak.
How was the entertainment system on the TBM 800?
I don't know if there was one, to be honest with you. All I know is, well, in terms of just getting the hell out of somewhere, a little plane, a smaller than commercial jet, is awesome. I mean, you're just taxiing. It's like, I turn the plane around, hit the gas, go. We were airborne immediately. And then ended up having to do a short hop back into the Bay Area, and flying over primetime traffic, or just the rush hour traffic below. And seeing those beautiful strings of bumper-to-bumper lights and everything, I was very appreciative.
I got to say,
and small airports just rock. It's like, holy cow.
Well, you're in, you're out. General aviation airports rock. Especially if you're rich and have a private jet.
That was the thing.
Not rich and have a private jet.
This was the cheapest flight I could find. I could have spent way more than I did.
Party of one to Oakland.
The freakiest part. Yeah, that final leg. I was alone with the pilots, and they're like, sit anywhere you want, bloody blah, blah, blah. Just get in.
Can we sit up with you guys? It's lonely back here.
Seriously, I was tempted to just say, hey, you mind if I grab the stick for a little bit? And just, but no. Alas.
they might have looked a little askance, the looking at you probably was.
No. They were happy I didn't bug them much.
When you fly, do you wear noise-canceling headphones?
Or? No. This time I had my, the really nice ones, the $100 in-ear headphones with the multiple tips.
One more?
Yes, thank you.
Triple driver?
Triple drivers, baby.
I was amazed at how much noise they actually blocked out, right? Because I reviewed the active noise cancellation headphones from One More earlier this year.
I also
year.
Like the fact that they're black. For some reason, they're just a really nice. They look nice.
They blend with most of your clothing.
Doesn't really matter, but I will say though, I must have relatively small ear holes or something, because those are the more. I'm using the smallest tips in the box, and I still can't quite. I have to really like stretch my earlobe out a little bit and shove them in good if I really want a good seal. But they're comfortable as hell.
The thing that surprised me.
I love how they sound.
For active noise cancellation, both for the Bose, which I hate, which are fantastic for noise cancellation. If I wanted to sleep, they were cool. If I wanted to listen to audiobooks, they were cool. But the music playback on the Bose 20s was atrocious. But what was interesting for me about the One More Dual Driver ANC Lightning in-ear headphones. They don't have a
triple
non,
driver.
Yeah, those are dual drivers.
Okay.
That's the ones they do with active noise cancellation.
Right.
So they don't have an Android version of it yet. They are working on that, I am led to believe. But what was fascinating for me was I didn't get a proper seal until I went to a smaller tip than I normally use, which makes me wonder if I'm often using a larger tip than I actually need. So
I'm still kind of used to the Shure headphones, earphones that I found finally that I thought I'd lost, but those have
disposable
earplug tips. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a foam earplug you would normally wear for like regular hearing protection, except that it incorporates the tube that delivers the sound into your ear hole. So those I find I get the best noise cancellation, passive anyway.
Right.
So, but however, it's the convenience of just having those one more triple drivers with me. Actually, I had like two or three sets of earbuds with me that on this trip. Like the ones that came with my phone.
Right.
My Shures.
I can't believe you carry those. Like, because that's your emergency.
Well, earbuds. I find that the ones that come with the phone are, you can almost sleep with those. You can like lay your head down and they don't stick out at all. So
interesting.
It can be kind of comfy that way. And as far as I think voice quality for phone calls and things like that, they're just as good as the One Mores, which I find are really good too. So
just when you start listening to music on them.
And once again, I am immensely thankful for Netflix and the ability to download some content onto your mobile device before you get on the flight. It's just, you will find something there you want to watch. I actually started diving back into Black Mirror. I got over those first two episodes and started diving into, I think, the rest of, they're short seasons. They're only like four or five episodes a season. So still very compelling, yet a little too close to reality, and it makes you uncomfortable to watch content. And
what was the most uncomfortable part?
I think the one where effectively everyone can record everything they see, and it leads to very, it just magnifies problems within society. It was
everything gets worse.
It was yet another. Not a happy story by any means, but that one was like, that is not far off. Like contact lenses or something you could put in to see the content, and the fact that literally your eyes can be the cameras and the problems that could potentially create or expose you to. That was, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, we normally talk about home theater technology. We talk about audio. We talk about all sorts of things that involve entertaining ourselves, not terrifying ourselves with visions of a totally tracked universe. But we digress sometimes.
A little bit.
Tell me about, should we talk about CES?
It's coming.
Yes. I mean,
I've already had pre-meetings for some companies.
I got two pre-meetings next week. So CES, it technically the press day starts on Sunday, right?
Oh.
But the reality is that there's these press events each evening where they have like 100 to 200 vendors at little tables and you run around from place to place. So there's one of those Sunday night, and then there's the big press day is on Monday, there's another big press day on Tuesday.
Usually the smaller companies can gather at these pre-events. Mm-hmm. It's an affordable way for them to show up and to grab a table, and it makes it easy for the people looking and reporting on this content just to go literally table to table and talk to the companies and see
it's
what they're
convenient,
doing.
Right? But I mean, we'll see Shure, we'll see Sennheiser, we'll see One More, there'll be a whole bunch of vendors.
As well as a few unexpected surprises.
That's
somebody's
the exciting
hiding something
part
in there.
Oh my goodness. And it's so Monday the 8th, LG's at 8 o'clock.
Oh, press day.
TCL's at 1 o'clock. Samsung's at 2 o'clock.
Sony's usually around
Sony's
4
at
or 5, 5 o'clock. Yeah.
They're at 5. So by 6 o'clock on Monday, we should pretty much know the future of televisions for 2018.
Indeed.
So if you're thinking about buying a television for Christmas, we fully support this. Don't get upset 2 weeks later when we're reporting from CES, when we're recording at CES and telling you about the next generation television, because they're not going to show up for the most part until May, June, July.
Definitely. There always will be some new releases for some of the smaller sizes, like by February.
Right.
But the bigger things people really want are typically, like you said, April, May, June.
I mean, I'm really curious to see, you know, what TCL is going to follow up with.
Could it be even higher performance? I'd like to see them do like a 1500 nit full array local dimming set to replace that P607 that's currently the mamma jamma. So freaking awesome. It's going to be another great year for televisions.
It's one thing to look at something like, when you're looking at something like TCL's, the 55P607, right? It's 55 inch. It's like $650 to $700 with occasional gusts to 850.
Which I believe it currently is right now.
But when you look at that, yeah, okay, they could do a 60 inch version, a 65 inch version. They could if they can get the glass, they can add additional panel sizes. They can improve the HDR quality on it. Samsung's obviously going to try to sort of breach the distance between themselves and LG's OLEDs. Where does LG go? Better reliability?
It'll be things like for those TVs that cost $2,000 or more. Mm-hmm. That's where the battleground is for the big guys right now. They can make good money and selling premium products in that space. And with the larger screen sizes people are transitioning to, 55. And as we've said before, 1080p, if you think those TVs are still going to exist, there will be a few, but none will be, as far as I've seen, larger than about 50 inches. And beyond that, it's all 4K at this point.
4K is the new 1080p.
That's just a check mark on any new TV above, say 55 and up.
Right.
And beyond that, I really don't think we're going to see like an 8K TV this year. I just don't think it's practical. We're still waiting on a few things in terms of content delivery and other mechanisms. We're barely doing good streaming 4K right now with HDR and wide color gamut and other features like that. So there will definitely be demos there. There will probably be a 16K demo at the show. I'm assuming somebody's going to throw down. But beyond that, one thing that has kind of popped up already in the news, ZDNet reported that Samsung is going to be showing off a 150-inch micro LED quote-unquote TV, and this is using the technology that's similar to their cinema LED panels that they use in commercial theaters. Mm-hmm. I believe the first one was installed in Seoul, Korea. The EU or the European market, I believe, also has their first version of this theater. These are generally smaller screens. They're mm-hmm. not as big as, say, like an IMAX theater or even most commercial theaters. I want to say these are about 40 feet across max, and they're generally at least 4K resolution in terms of the actual pixel counts. The big deal is, though, for this micro LED TV, they're talking 150-inch screen size. And if this reporting turns out to be true, and this will be demoed on the show floor, this would compete more so, I think, with ultra premium projection,
mm-hmm.
Specifically those kind of installations, rather than something like a true 150-inch TV. And the potential there really is, if you're using LED panels where it is micro LEDs, not the direct lit, when the pixel turns off, it is pure black, so you get the potential for incredible contrast ratios.
So that would bridge them. That would bridge them to one of the primary advantages of OLED at that point.
Yeah, but at 150 inches, even ask.
Sorry, that slid right over my head the first time.
Don't even ask what the price point's going to be. This is literally
$1 million.
It will be expensive, but this should be using similar tiled technology that they've demonstrated before, and so have other companies.
Mm-hmm.
But this has the potential, though, for somebody who is considering maybe a projection system, a premium projection setup in their home. This could do it and deal not only deliver more light output, they're talking 500 nits or more, in addition to wide color gamut, mm-hmm. but incredible contrast, up there with the very best laser projectors today. And I'm talking very expensive projectors, too. So I'm not looking at this as a true TV. I see this more as somebody who really wants a video wall, more along that line, and that ability for the performance. So that'll be one of the things we'll be checking out, I assume, right on the show flow.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I'm trying to think of what else I can actually talk about at this point. A lot of it's probably stuff people are like, upgrades to what we've seen, as with every year.
A lot of incremental stuff. There's no, yes. We don't expect any big announcements on, like, 8K. Over the, you know what I mean? Like, it's too early for 8K, and I don't want 8K. I have no interest in 8K.
Well, the news just popped up for HDMI 2.1 as that standard becomes closer and closer to reality.
Up to 42 million K.
Well, 16K. at least within the spec, and that
but that's future proofing a connection,
commercial installations as well, and to get that 8K or even the 16K resolution support, I believe that would require a different cable of some kind, but that's something else though.
Surely just
at least the standard as described will be backward compatible. I have heard of nobody integrating HDMI 2.1 into anything soon, let alone like an AV receiver or let alone a television or anything like that.
Right.
So this is more of looking down the road. The big deals within HDMI 2.1 will be things like high frame rate support, being able to do 4K 120 on a TV that could support that. The bandwidth will be there to do it. And also a variable frame rate system, which... Mm-hmm. I don't know of any game console that currently supports that. You know, everything, we're all still in, you know, HDMI 2.0X, whatever, standard at the moment. But looking forward, I think this 2.1 spec, it incorporates just enough stuff to where that's going to be solid for a while. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of the first chipsets and products that incorporate it. Being able to shift the frame rate up and down is directly what gamers kind of need in order to provide fluid experiences with very demanding content that might not be able to hold, you know, the perfect 4K 120 frame rate, let alone what kind of hardware it would require to actually push a visually impressive title at frames that detailed and that fast. That's a boatload of data. That's a fire hose. That's a fire hose pointed right in your eyeballs.
Well, and it's a fire hose with questionable return on investment in data.
True. Well,
I mean, 8K will look wonderful when you're 7 or 8 inches from the monitor, but it's complete overkill.
150-inch screen sizes and above.
Okay.
When you start spreading out those pixels, you need more of them to make it.
We barely have 4K content.
Very detailed. Exactly. UHD Blu-ray.
This is forward-looking, though.
The standard. So I'm looking forward to it, though. But just to see that HDMI 2.1 spec coming along, let alone we were talking about ATSC 3 a little while ago.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will see more finalized hardware at the show regarding that. I am curious to see if any TVs for next year will even incorporate said tuners. I kind of doubt it. But there are already broadcasters experimenting with it right now in very select markets. So there's a lot of change afoot on the back end.
A bit. And
it'll be interesting to see.
Oh my goodness. You had a Roku TV surprise.
Yeah. I was spending the holidays with a relative and I canceled their cable, which turned out to be surprisingly easy. A couple clicks on the interwebs and it worked out just great. Added a decent flat antenna to the TVs in the house, and then ran the channel scan on what is considered a very value Roku TV from TCL. Yeah. And went with a Mohu antenna, if anybody cares, that happens to be made from 100% recycled materials, including cable boxes, which just made me giggle.
It's kind of adorable.
I got to say, just the ad, what do they call it? The Mohu Relief Indoor TV antenna. They claim 45-mile range. I was actually mildly surprised by the performance given the location I was in. The thing about flat antennas is that if you're dealing with more than one direction for where your broadcast towers are located, that might not be the most ideal antenna for you. That's really best when you have a concentration of your broadcasters all in one direction. And that's just something to keep in mind. And if you do set up these antennas, try it on the wall that's most convenient first, always, but then try it at 90 degrees. Or if the TV is fortunate enough to have an actual signal meter built into it, which surprisingly most don't. However, that TCL Roku TV did, actually a very good one. It made it easier to place that antenna in the best spot to get the most channels we could. But beyond that, built into that Roku TV, and I want to say this was a 2016 model, as soon as I did the channel scan, it popped up a message asking, hey, if you insert a 16 gigabyte or larger USB stick into the side of the TV, we'll give you up to a 90-minute buffer for live TV programming.
Really?
And it's definitely not a DVR, but it's a single-channel buffer, so at least you could pause what you're watching currently, run to the bathroom or the kitchen or whatever you need to do, and come back and unpause it and keep going. And you just, as I was warned, be careful not to change the channel if you are buffering something, otherwise you will lose it. However, it's just kind of one of those little things that just continues to impress me about that platform. and having Roku do the full interface for the TV in addition to their great software. So
nice.
If you happen to own one of those Roku TVs and you are using the antenna, pick up an inexpensive 16 gig drive or larger and at least have a little time delay for you, or a little the ability to pause live TV. So
that's pretty cool.
I thought so.
I love that. New OLED emitters coming to town. Thermally activated delayed fluorescence, or TADEF.
TADEF, man. It turns out that there has literally been one company supplying the OLED materials used in the majority of the mobile devices and televisions that we appreciate today. That is all changing. And this new technology, TADEF, is effectively going to provide a more stable blue subpixel in the displays that actually use blue OLEDs. Also more efficient and lower cost red and green emitters. The main benefit, I think, for this technology is that it's going to enable an easier transition to inkjet style application of these materials rather than the current,
I believe,
an evaporative process in a vacuum right now. A little challenging compared to being able just to simply squirt it out onto something and have it dry in essence at room temperature. This also will reduce or completely eliminate the need for rare earth metals that are also the primary tech within the current OLED materials. And looking at the major investors of this technology, of course, it's LG and Samsung. Chances are we're going to see this in phones first, if I were guessing, because I think about the current display tech using OLED. And the only place you really have RGB OLED TVs, where you have a separate red, blue, and green subpixel,
right,
is with OLED material, is within mobile displays. As far as TVs go, LG apparently uses their white OLED emitter is a stacked blue and yellow material system.
Really?
So maybe they will be replacing that blue material with the new TADEF technology. And that could improve. I haven't seen color performance measurements on this tech yet, but this could be something that would add to the longevity, considering that since day one, blue has been the most challenging of the colors in terms of its tendency to not only fade over time or to reduce brightness over time as the material is used, but also shifting in color. Originally, the blue would always shift toward yellow, or the screen would become more and more yellow as blue desaturated with use. So I have heard no reports of anyone actually incorporating this into a 2018 display, although I have read a few articles online suggesting that it may be coming to TVs this year. But this seems like something that would be more on the mobile side first, I would guess. However, this is pretty new stuff. They've been experimenting with different formulations. The flexibility in terms of the materials that can go into a TADEF emitter are definitely far more wide-ranging than the current technology they're using for OLED. But this simply also adds more sources of the OLED material. Rather than having one person controlling it all, and you have to buy it from company X. Now we're going to have companies X, Y, and Z providing these materials, inviting, in my opinion, probably more competition, lower costs, better longevity, more stability, increased brightness. It should be a good thing. Whether or not we see any of that in 2018 is the unknown that we will answer. We will answer soon enough when I grab LG and Samsung and corner them in a room somewhere and politely ask. So,
tell me.
What do you think of TADEF?
What do you think of TADEF?
It's good just to see. It's good to see that technology expanding. And when we talked to the Quantum Dot folks a while back down at Nanosys, one of their big pushes, too, was to come up with inkjet printable materials. And that was their, at the time at least, the big thing they could do over OLED currently. So if OLED now has a way to literally create an application process that's very similar to inkjet printing at room temperature, that's a win-win for all of us, I think, in the end.
We like winning.
I do. I like more affordable, beautiful, high-contrast displays for all with incredible color saturation.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. So I've been experimenting with vinyl.
Oh, man.
What a traumatic experience.
I just picture that I never had a piece of vinyl survive very long in pristine condition.
Well, it's interesting. So there's kind of three categories of vinyl users that I'm thinking about right now.
Oh, okay.
One is like you and I, Robert and myself, which is people who grew up with vinyl. and then got CDs.
And never looked back.
Yeah. I mean, like, literally, like, I bought a couple of vinyl albums because they were never going to be released on CD.
Always. There will always be that case.
I bought the New York Citizens' first album, The Truth About the New York Citizens. I want to say I would be there. No, that was the compilation that came out later. Like, anybody cares about my obscure ska band obsessions from the 80s. But On the Move, the first, you know, Moon Records, like, it was like, I think it was like Moon Records number 8. You know, it was one of the first, like, third wave ska albums I heard. Huge impact on me. Talked about places I was hanging out in New York City. It's just an important album to me. A couple of the songs ended up in that compilation, but the album itself is never going to be released on CD. So I bought that on vinyl. The Donkey Show, another obscure, in this case, British ska band. And so I'd bought a few of these albums to digitize. And
digitize the vinyl?
Digitize the vinyl. Yeah, The Donkey Show, Bali Island. Fantastic, right? Because it was the only way I was going to, because the way I have consumed my music for most of the last decade plus is in
digital file formats.
Digital file formats. And these days, it's all FLAC files. You know, and so there's these relatively obscure albums that nobody's going to, you know, nobody's going to make CDs out of them.
Are you ever tempted, like, once you rip a vinyl album, to like run it through some noise reduction or something? Or no, I guess you shouldn't mess with it at all. Just take it as is. And
there used to be, you know, a long
time I'd be tempted to play with that output.
Yeah, but you know what I discovered is a lot of the software, and it's been a long time since I've looked at a lot of the software out there, right? But you know, 10, 15 years ago, there were a half dozen applications, one of which was part of an expansion pack for Windows that was designed to capture your audio from a vinyl source and clean it up. And in some cases, there's pop and hiss removers. In some cases, there's other stuff. In some cases, it was designed to allow you to record an album without using a phono preamp, which I don't think ever worked very well. But they were, you know, they were essentially applying what a phono preamp would do in terms of the audio curve and amplifying the signal. I don't think it ever worked very well, but it was an option.
There's always Audacity.
And literally, what I ended up doing was basically capturing, you know, getting the best kind of level I could, then capturing into Audacity. Because in many cases, the super cool guy, you know, you're a digital audio kind of guy trying to deal with your analog collection. We're going to, you know, and they're, you know, a lot of presets, you know, just made, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a limited amount of quality I can get out of vinyl, into capturing vinyl into a PC format.
Totally.
And then applying all of this processing tend to make it sound like crap. So I tend to go for the pure experience.
I do not blame you whatsoever.
So, you know, there's this Joe Jackson album, I'm the Man. Intervention Records released it. And so, you know, I saw that. And
You've gone through at least two of them now.
I'm on my third copy.
Jeez, what happened?
Okay.
Okay,
so
the first one had the big scratch on it.
The first one had the big scratch on it.
Sent that back.
I got a replacement.
Version 2.
Yeah, first one was sealed. Opened it up. I think whoever had bought it had
Carefully resealed
it and sent it back to Amazon. Because the plastic on that one was different from the plastic on the next two.
Rebag.
So I returned that. I ordered a second one from Amazon. This one shows up in an obviously opened, it had been, somebody had opened it. This time it has, you know, the proper wrapping. It's been opened and the album is obviously dirty and is also scratched.
And this is sold as a new item.
So sold as a new item by Amazon. So a friend of mine last night was sending me some really amusing text messages. It was basically like, you know, never buy vinyl from Amazon, which I tend to agree with at this point. So I talked to a friend of mine who, oddly enough, works in marketing at Interscope, and she said, try Acoustic Sounds, acousticsounds.com.
Okay.
And if you're a vinyl nerd and you don't know about acousticsounds.com, you're really going to damage your credit card.
Okay.
You know, so
is it worth it?
Well, that's what's the interesting part, right? So I pick up the copy of Joe Jackson, I'm the Man, which you and I...
Number 3.
Unwrapped, copy 3, this time...
It looked pretty good.
This, yeah, it looked beautiful. It wasn't covered with crap.
No.
It didn't look like people had, you know, rubbed the ridges down with their thumbnails or something. So props to Acoustic Sounds. They do a fantastic job of packaging.
Never let me handle your albums.
Yeah, well, it's bad enough when I handle my albums. But that's the point, right? Part of the reason you and I, you know, being of an age, walked away from vinyl is because it was a pain in the ass.
I could stick a CD in the disc doctor and repair a scratch that way. I ain't doing that with vinyl.
So I went nuts.
Becomes a frisbee after that.
Oh, my goodness. So I lost my mind. I got the copy of Joe Jackson, I'm the Man, which is pristine and not scratched. It's a big plus. I'm enjoying that. I picked up a copy. It turns out the Cowboy Junkies, the Trinity Session, has been remastered for vinyl. It's one of my favorite albums of all time.
I have that on FLAC.
And they did a CD, SACD CD version of it, so I picked that up because I'm gonna digitize that later on today. And then I bought a copy of Coltrane's A Love Supreme, which is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Nice.
So I now have three pristine albums. I also have my original, like, 30-year-old copy, 25-year-old copy of Joe Jackson's I'm the Man. And I got to say, you know, the reprint from Intervention Records is much nicer than the original album. The vinyl's heavier. It holds its shape better.
Good.
It's, you know, they've you know, the album cover, it's an opening album cover. It's a beautiful printing, disc.
Okay.
But what's funny is you start going to, this is one of those things where, like, I was looking at the catalog that comes from Acoustic Sounds, and there's all these companies, like, and it's interesting because you start searching around, you find out things like, oh, okay, the Rage Against the Machine vinyl that's like at Hot Topics or Guitar Center or whatever, wherever else I've seen it, that's apparently the 20th anniversary remastering destroyed the dynamics of the original album. The Sausage of Sound on a vinyl album. In some cases, there are companies going out of their way to take, you know, analog masters and either, you know, reproduce the original master or create a new original master, like Intervention Records doing new masters of classic albums. You know, in other cases, like the Cowboy Junkies, it was like they went back and revisited this. I also learned about the recording of the Cowboy Junkies, the Trinity Session, which I'm not going to go into because I will nerd out heavily and put everyone to sleep. You know, and they had a damaged cover copy of 311's Music, which is one of my favorite albums that I have never heard on vinyl. And I'm like, what the hell? You know, I'm already going to get thrown out of the house by my wife when this box shows up. And then she saw the Coltrane album. She's like, oh, that's beautiful. I'm like, yeah, except it's an album. But like most of the albums I own, there's like, you know, I own a couple Minor Threat albums on vinyl because I love the cover art and I've used the albums as art, right? So, you know, and I have friends that insist that analog sounds better. And I respectfully say that I enjoy the experience.
Yes.
Kind of. You know, I'm still getting used to picking up the needle and putting it down on the record, which is very terrifying to me.
For me, like I've mentioned before, it's the how it would have been presented back in the day.
Yeah.
And to recreate that moment, like, years ago.
It is a cool feeling.
How you would have heard it.
You know, to
time travel aspect.
It says something like, you know, I've talked about this working with my boys, to have them think of being music as not just something that happens in the background, but that you celebrate as an experience or an event. So you sit down and you listen to the whole album. The record player I bought to digitize those ska albums, the tone arm got damaged. And of course, it turns out I can't replace the tone arm on that album. And that meant I couldn't actually get the needle to align properly. So I ended up going on Craigslist and I picked up one of U-Turn Audio's turntables from a lovely couple of graduate students at Berkeley, the Orbit Plus turntable, which I got like half of what they paid for it. You know, it's got a big, fat, heavy, clear plastic turntable, so it's got some weight to it. I think there were some flutter issues early on, but they seem to have resolved all of those. You know, you have to manually switch the belt
speeds
to go between 33 and 45, which is a little Rube Goldberg. And the thing that scares me, like, they don't sell it with a Q lever. The Q lever is like a $40 upgrade. So you saw me like God,
I wasn't sure what that lever was called, but
Q lever.
That is the only way I would even attempt it nowadays.
Yeah. Well, I will probably buy the Q lever.
Again, I'm watching someone else do this. I'm not touching it.
Yeah, you were watching me, and I'm terrified because I'm like, I finally got a clean copy, an unscratched copy of I'm the Man, and I'm like, oh, dear God.
Best thing I can do with an album is just leave it sealed in the case and go buy the CD if I can.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about like the issues I had with the ground hum I had to chase aligning the cartridge, because it's one of the cool things that came out of this is the crew over at Grado, they just released an update. My original cartridge, I've had a green Grado Prestige cartridge for like ever.
Oh, yeah. The one that went lost for a while.
The one that went lost and then was returned to me. Oh, that's yours? Would you like that back? Yeah, I would. But Grado Labs, their entry-level cartridges are the Prestige series of cartridges. They just released the Prestige Series 2 recently. And it was funny because there was an Ortofon cartridge on that U-turn turntable. And I swapped in the Prestige Series 2, the green cartridges. I had had one of those previously. And... you know, it's a very intense process, right? Because you've got to, you know, attach, you know, you've got to mount the cartridge, attach the wires to the cartridge. You've got to align the cartridge. You've got to, you know, get the tracking weight set properly on the cartridge, which basically means, like, you can print out a tracking alignment, but you need a scale. So I borrowed somebody's gram scale, then ended up buying a needle scale because their gram scale disappeared and they couldn't find it. And it's,
This is a project.
It has been a long ass project. you know, and it was.
That's the part of the experience. Like you said, it is an experience to do this.
Yeah.
And
you know, the
not
funny
for the faint of heart.
It would have been much easier if I just grabbed that. You know, I have a mid 70s Yamaha AV or AV receiver, a Yamaha integrated receiver that I got for free with a pair of Klipsch Heresies I bought. Oh. And I should have just sat the turntable on top of that and plugged it into the record inputs,
the
LP inputs on the phono inputs on that, because it would have been much simpler. Because like, that was the other funny thing, I've been dealing with digital sources for so long, which are outputting at that like 2.83 volt level you get, you know, from the CD standard, which usually requires attenuation to have a decent listening level. And I had to have an active preamp in my stack for the first time in approximately forever to be able to record the levels or to be able to get a decent output level from these albums. So three things. I enjoy, once all of this crap was set up,
right?
I say this with love and affection, once everything was set up, I enjoyed the experience of listening to vinyl, right? Maybe because it reminds me of being like 6 years old and listening to Tommy by the Who or you know, my mother cleaning the house. We had this, you know, Sony with these matching square speakers, and she would put on like Carol King and clean the living snot out of the house.
For me, it was these 45 albums that came with these storybooks,
right,
my mom used to provide us. And so basically somebody would read you the story.
Right.
While you listened to the 45.
Oh, nice.
Was, yeah. These things are probably worth a fortune today. I remember what they look like. I have to do a little Googling to see if I can track that down. But they were purple and white, I remember. Anyway.
No.
No distraction needed.
So compare the analog experience to another product I've been playing around with, iFi's Micro IDST Black Label Edition, right? Which, you know, to connect to my iPhone, you know, required...
Was that the thing you had to stack on top?
Yeah, well...
And it came with a nifty... band to hold it all together. Oh,
yeah,
that,
I mean
that
it's yeah.
Beautiful piece of extruded aluminum hardware.
Yeah. So, you know, it is a
and battery pack.
A nerdly audio device. It is, you know, this is, you know, if you want something subtle, you know, you get the iPhone Lightning camera adapter, the USB camera adapter, and you plug a
jack right into that.
Yeah, well, you plug an AudioQuest Dragonfly into that. If you don't want to use the audio output on the phone, this is much bigger, right? This is actually physically bigger than my iPhone.
Oh, definitely.
You know, but it comes with like a little silicone pad that goes between your iPhone and the back of the IDST Black Label Edition, and the rubber bands to hold it together. But what was fascinating for me is I had the USB Lightning adapter. It plugs into the slot that's, you know, basically routed out for it on the back of the IDST Black Label Edition device.
I mean, that's a serious audiophile setup, though.
This is.
Portable...
But, you know, setup for the phone was like 30 seconds.
Right.
And setup on my Windows 10 PC was, you know, I downloaded a driver, I installed it, and then I plugged it in with the cable that was included in the box from iFi.
Nice.
Right? And then it not only offered a headphone output, but it also allowed me to connect it to my desktop amplifier because I am an audio geek, and let's be honest about that. You know,
put it through its paces.
Yeah, and then I could, you know, and you can experiment at that point. Like if you want to play around with the filters on the DAC, or if you want to, you know, it has a bunch of ability to adjust the audio level to match. If you have particularly sensitive in-ear monitors, you can basically, you know, lower the level on the output on this. So you can basically use more than like, you know, 9 to 10. Like, you know, if you've some headphone amps, you can adjust, like, you know, I can have two notches of volume.
Perhaps my greatest pet peeve with any audio product, if it does
that. Yeah. And it sounds fantastic. And I didn't have to, like, you know, okay, I'm a digital guy, I guess is what I'm saying.
Same here.
And it's interesting to think about, you know, yeah, I like dropping the needle on the record. It's fun.
In some cases, that's the only option for classic content.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and it's also like, you know, I finally found a copy of Deutsche Grammophon's Ludwig van Beethoven Symphony No. 9 Chorale, which was the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra with von Karajan.
I may own that too.
This is a fantastic version of this. You know,
so
this
many CDs.
This I got for like $10. It's only used as far as I can tell now. You know, the vinyl version of this is like 125 and climbing, right? Because it's out of print and even more rare. And oh, yeah, they get scratched.
Yes.
So anyhow, yes. Thank you for listening to my long, drawn-out conversation about vinyl and its glories.
The pain.
And joy. It's been interesting. Not so interesting.
I'm more surprised at how difficult it is to get a pristine piece of vinyl nowadays, apparently. I mean, I'm sure that's not the case. Maybe it's just random with certain titles and things like that. But I would think with things that can be damaged so easily, they would take a little extra care.
Well, like I said, you know, the packaging wasn't bad from Amazon.
Okay.
I think Amazon is, you know, doing what Amazon does. And I've had this happen with tools I bought for my truck where something has been, you know, has come back to the warehouse. Somebody who has maybe never used a vacuum pump and gauge system, you know, goes like, oh, it looks like it's all here, and slides it back in the box and throws it back up on the rack.
I was mildly miffed when I got a pack of 9-volt batteries that they blew out of the box within the shipping container, and they were just kind of flying everywhere. I'm like, what is this that I ordered?
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway. That's
so, yeah, but, you know, it's
my worst experience of the week.
A friend of mine who's a, you know, Burke, who says, like, the Force is speaking to you, Patrick Norton. Do not buy vinyl that will be mailed to you unless it's from a record store.
At least.
And he also says, never buy rechargeable batteries on Amazon. You know, so acoustic sounds, big thumbs up.
Very nice.
You know, and
a good source for quality vinyl.
Yeah, and they package it like they're packaging truly precious things.
Good.
And music really is truly precious.
Seriously, because I imagine there is no such thing as cheap vinyl anymore.
You know, yeah,
relative
there's still bargain bins.
You can spend a lot on discs too, but
well, it's one of those situations where there are bargain bins, right? You know, where it's cheap, and there's stuff that people are looking for. You know, like, you know, Blue Note and Verve and Impulse and, you know, all the classic jazz and a bunch of, you know, certain classical albums. You know, there's places where the new stuff, that a lot of it I've seen is starting at 20.
Okay.
And more often for some of the stuff that's actually recorded by people who care, $35.
Right.
You know, I paid
not outrageous, but
$50 for that.
The Joe Jackson?
No. No, I paid $50 for the Cowboy Junkies album. Cuz I'm curious. I'm going to listen to that. I'm going to listen to the CD.
That encourages me to look up my CD, or actually probably the flacking code of my CD nowadays.
It's good.
As I scroll through a file listing on a server.
So much more convenient. Well, yeah, it's vinyl is very deliberate. I think it's better to have access to somebody else's massive vinyl collection.
Indeed.
Than to try to put one together yourself.
I'm living vicariously right now.
You know, I learned a lot about living vicariously through, like, other people's sailboat ownership, and now I will remember that as I look at this giant collection of audio equipment that my wife will kill me over in a gentle and gracious way because she loves me and music. Tracy's got a question for us. He writes, ask at avxl.com. I have a Yamaha AVR with two HDMI sub outputs. The main family room has a 5.1 setup. The second HDMI feeds a wall-mounted TV in the basement, hopefully to be replaced by a projector in 5 to 10 years. Do it. Do it now.
Enjoy both.
Yeah, actually. I am shopping for wall-mountable speakers for the basement. Speaker wire is already in wall, and I could power a set of speakers with an old stereo I have. If I decided to go with 5.1, then I would also need to get an amp. Kef has the T205s on sale for $1,200, but my current favorites would be a pair of Mythos Gem XLs for about $700, or possibly a pair of Martin Logan Motion 6s, discontinued, for around $425.
Nice!
Am I crazy, or would upgrading from the TV's built-in speakers to a pair of Mythos Gem XLs be such a huge improvement that I could get by with just a 2.1 setup, or maybe upgrade to 5.1 in a couple of years? Or is the Kef T205s too good a deal to pass up? Other options? Thanks, Mark. Oddly enough, I have a set of Kef's T-Series speakers in my house.
I'll just throw it out there. I haven't heard good TV speakers in a long time.
Yeah, well, that was
point blank.
The first thing we should say in
I mean, even for regular TV listening.
Let us make it abundantly clear. Even a couple of computer stereo speakers that used to be on Uncle, you know, Herbert's desk are probably a step up from whatever came in your television.
Something you likely could dumpster dive and find.
Yeah.
Behind most office buildings.
There's a...
Well, you know, sound better.
You know, we're not saying that's the way to roll, but you would be... When you put... 2.1 is almost... like, stereo speakers and a subwoofer is almost always a vast improvement over the experience you're getting from the speakers in the television.
Yeah.
Period.
The only exception I could even come close to saying it would be worth it is like Sony's A1E OLED TV that just happens to have a pretty decent driver in it, in addition to some really interesting acoustic stuff.
Yeah.
The acoustic surface display or sound system. Besides that one, and even then, I'd still want 5.1 at some point.
Mm-hmm.
A sound bar will always be your best value in terms of just a standard audio upgrade for any TV for a relatively affordable price.
Yeah.
And it's something nowadays most incorporate things like Bluetooth and other things. So if you want to do some basic streaming from a mobile device or whatever, it makes it super easy. And with a lot of these TVs that have Bluetooth built in, I will even go so far as to use a portable Bluetooth speaker. It will still sound better than the speakers built into even expensive TVs.
Yeah.
Like, I have a 4K HDR hung up on the wall right now, but I am continually disappointed by the sound quality that comes out of that thing. And I really avoid it at all costs.
You know, I mean, so if you want, you know, my first thought would be yes, upgrade the speakers.
Sure.
Even if you, you know, get real speakers.
Yeah.
You know, and whether or not the Kef T205, that system is pretty badass. I've got the 305, which is practically the same thing with a slightly larger surround speakers. Yeah, that's a fantastic deal for that. It's a nice subwoofer. It's not the biggest, hugest subwoofer, but it balances out nicely. Part of me would love to have a second one of those, just because Robert has me obsessed with multiple subwoofers because he does that.
It's two. If the AVR has the .2.
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
Got a couple of the, if you're starting on a budget, I think a couple of those monoprice subs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a horrible place to start.
No, and they've been on sale for like, $99 or $79 for Black Friday.
So anyway.
If Brent Butterworth can live with it, trust me, you can.
You can't go wrong with a couple of subs.
I will also say, like, you know, the Kef T205s is a fantastic deal for $1,200. But, you know, if your favorites are the Mythos Gem XLs, those definitive speakers, go for the speaker you love, man.
Seriously.
If you want to do 5.1, buy an AVR. You know, the T205s are great. If you want to do the Mythos Gem XLs and the 2.1, that's good too. But make sure, whether it's the Kef T205 or the Mythos Gem XLs, make sure you have a subwoofer.
I was going to say that, and maybe even see if the availability of a matching center channel in particular, when you start to think about that, it's when you start adding the other speakers. Ideally, you don't want a collection of drastically different sounding speakers.
Well, that's the nice thing about the T205 system is you're getting five plus a subwoofer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, even better. So, you know, but something to keep in mind if you're piecemealing it together.
Yeah, because that's the thing, like, you know, when you look at something, you're talking about like Martin Logan Motion 6s, you know, if you're patient enough to slowly poach additional speakers over the next few years, because there's usually this point where like discontinued speakers are available and they disappear, and sometimes they show up on eBay and sometimes they don't, or you're on AudioGon or US Audio Mart or Craigslist or wherever you're looking. But there's nothing more frustrating than having like most of a system but not being able to find the last piece.
Right. And then paying through the nose to get that last piece because, oh, it might no longer be manufactured anymore, or some obscure brand that it's like, oh, well, roll the dice.
It seemed like such a good idea at the time. But definitely, definitely upgrade the speed. Move beyond. Walk away from the speakers in the... walk away from the speakers in the television.
And going back to his basement setup too, I don't ever think of projection and TV as either or, unless it's a dedicated room for one or the other, specifically more on the line of doing a projection setup. There is nothing wrong with having that screen come down over the TV that it's that's also in the room. Just depending on what the usage scenario is. Maybe it's a bright day, or it's like, hey, we're gonna have, you know, it's not appropriate to be running the projector right now, or it is, and to have that option to go back and forth. Just that large screen viewing experience. You really can't even appreciate regular Blu-ray, let alone UHD Blu-ray, until the screen sizes start bumping up.
Yeah.
And there are the other hassles related with it in terms of, you know, the setup of a projector, in terms of geometry and focus and getting that image, all of it, let alone calibration. So,
you know, one other thing to think about is, you know, if this is for television, wall mounting the speakers is fantastic. If it's for stereo listening, for audio listening, that does not always yield the best experience in terms of creating an effective like sound stage and kind of
the
stereo
one,
reproduction.
The one way a client I dealt with recently had dealt with that was that they had the in-ceiling speakers for, you know, things like surround channels and the height channels for a Dolby Atmos setup. But then they had two regular tower, or regular, quote-unquote, the tower speakers for the front, left, right channels, as well as a standalone center channel as well that was matched. And that worked pretty damn well, I must admit. It did sound good. But like you said, the stereo channels up front, it's nice when they can be separate towers almost, or the equivalent as far as an in-wall rated speaker. Something like that.
It's an interesting thought.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, I had one quick follow-up on HDMI 2.1. One thing it's going to bring, I forgot to mention this earlier, dynamic HDR. So the open source version of that. Dolby Vision doesn't require HDMI 2.1. That's already, it's got its own system that works, I believe, going back to HDMI 1.4 or so. But for the open dynamic metadata system that will be implemented in some TVs eventually, HDMI 2.1 will allow that support. And I may have said 16K resolution. No, it's just 8K and 10K. Still, those are going to be more for, I think, commercial installation scenarios and or pro use. And that would, in essence, equal, hey, you can do 4K at 120 hertz or maybe even 8K at 60 hertz. And for those higher bandwidths, I implied it, but just to be clear, there likely will be the need for a new cable on those extreme bandwidth applications like doing 4K 120 and beyond. So there is that.
Oh, my goodness.
Coming soon.
Oh, my goodness. I think we're probably going to have to wrap this one up. Obviously, I'm still in the dying, kicking throes of my vinyl experience. So
I'm knee deep in OLED calibration this week. I'm doing a brand new, I think it's a B7A, the Value OLED. I have a 65-incher I got to tune up tomorrow. And then I have a couple of last year's B6 TVs that I'm doing for another client. That's gonna be my busy OLED week. No problems there though.
I finally got to see Valerian in City of a Thousand Planets.
Oh, any good?
Visually stunning.
Yeah. That's not necessarily enough for me.
It's one of those things, like, the first third of the movie's pretty fantastic, and then it kind of, you know, Luc Besson took some liberties with the original, you know, relatively short comic series. Visually stunning, kind of ground through the last third or half of the movie.
Gotcha.
It was always utterly gorgeous. Spider-Man Homecoming is awesome. And Baby Driver is just fantastic. I'm probably going to buy the Blu-ray from that just because it's...
All right. There's something else I'll check
out. It's a delightful blend of music and vehicular mayhem. It appeals to me deeply. Well, just, it's, you know, I'm just going to say one phrase, gunfights on the beat. That's all I'm going to say.
There you go.
Keep an eye out for that when you're watching.
I need to check my local Dolby Vision theater, the one that's closest to me, and see what they're playing for the next couple weeks. And if there's anything I want to jump in there and lay eyeballs on before it transitions away. Because that theater experience still is the finest looking and sounding thing you can drop in and just check out to really get a feel for what the latest display tech and audio tech is all doing in one commercial environment, at least.
Well, you know it's coming up soon, don't you?
Mm-mm. Stuff.
Star Wars. Nothing but our wars.
I really need to get caught up on that. I haven't seen any of the new ones.
Did you watch John Wick 2 yet?
No.
Watch John Wick 2?
I'm back in town. I will find that disc and do it up. I was super pleased, though, to know that on Netflix, they still have the Star Wars animated series that's still on there.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of the name of it now. God, I need more coffee. But they had like the six seasons of it. And Clone Wars. Thank you. Jeez.
You mean anyway. Star Wars Rebels?
No, Star Wars Clone Wars. Or the Clone Wars. Wow, now I'm going to have to look it
now
up.
Now we're totally confused.
Star Wars. Clone Wars. Yeah, Clone Wars.
You're right, Clone Wars.
Clone Wars rocked. And I will be honest with you, it is not for, I wouldn't say it's for young children either.
Well, it's funny, the first person who told me that Star Wars, the Clone Wars rocked was our friend Roger Chang.
Oh, okay.
And then Seamus started watching it. He became utterly obsessed with it. My 10-year-old son.
Okay, I'd say 10 is okay. My buddy's kid was like, I think he's almost 5. And there were some things, like I think there's the one episode where the bug goes in your ear and gets in your brain and makes you do things.
Hate that.
That really kind of messed with him. And I think it gave him nightmares or something. be aware there are some. It may be animated, but that has some, at least, pretty dark material in it in certain episodes.
Well, and, you know,
that's what drew me to it.
I let my son watch Guardians of the Galaxy with me, you know, at the ripe old age of 7. So it's not as aggressive as my parents taking me to see Tommy.
Oh, my dad taking me to see Scarface when I was like 11. It's like
so many things just became utterly clear.
Dad.
No, Clone Wars is really good, but The Last Jedi is coming up. I will loan you the Blu-rays so you can catch up.
Yeah, I'll get busy on that. I'm sure it's a fun ride. I'm sure they're not totally hosing that to death.
Have you even seen the trailers for that?
Not
Do you
really.
Trailer?
I accidentally.
Do you even trailer, bro?
I accidentally like saw a key thing like. A character dying or something the other day, and I was like, what? It's like, okay, I really haven't seen this. I really need to sit down before this goes any further.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, it's all for me. It's about quality and the time of my life. It's like I am not sitting through crap unless I absolutely have to.
It
has to be a good movie, and I have to see, like, people are just like, man, this is something not only – visually and audibly,
Baby Driver,
solid,
awesome.
But the story's got to be good with good
Spider-Man
acting.
Homecoming.
There's just
awesome.
So much garbage coming out of Hollywood that
coming out everywhere.
When I was younger, I watched everything that came to the theater. I mean, I spent all my time in the cinema. So, but that ain't me anymore.
Lost it in the theater.
No, totally. It's just like I would watch anything. It's like, oh, what's the new movie this week? Go see it. And now it's more like. Somebody pre-filter that crap for me.
Well, you also had a lot.
Give me the cream to the top, please, or whatever you want to. However
well,
you want to.
There are
that.
Fewer entertainment options. I say I lost it at the movies. Is the Pauline Kael name? Sorry.
Anyway,
sorry, Ms. Kael. With that, ladies and gentlemen, If you enjoyed this rambling discussion of audio and video and
HDMI 2.1
and the occasional foray into vinyl suffering,
OLED emitters,
please head on over to patreon.com/AVXL. We'll you know, keep doing this podcast if you pay us. Yeah, just pay us and we'll keep doing the podcast. Not much.
Collectively.
We got some new treats coming up for patrons coming up in January, and we'll tell you about more of those at CES and after CES. But right now, though, we got to get going because we got to get out of this studio so the nice people who own it can do things in it that they can't do while we're in here talking.
Indeed.
Plus, they're staring funny at the turntable.
What the? Escape.
I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I'm Robert Herron.
We'll catch you next week on AVXL.